Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of 2023, episode 142. With me, Dan Prosser, and my TI co-founder and co-host, Andrew Frankel. So this week, we're talking about hot hatches. Over Christmas, we ran what we called the Hot Hatch World Cup, which was really just a little bit of fun to keep us occupied over Christmas. But it turned into a bit of a thing, and I think people enjoyed following it. And the point of it was to declare one hot hatch the greatest of all time, as voted for by the Intercooler audience. So that's what we talk about this week. But we begin this episode on a somber note with the very sad news that Ken Block was killed in a snowmobile accident yesterday. So we get onto hot hatches soon, but we begin by talking about Ken Block. I never met Ken Block, you didn't either, but it's just impossible in our world not to be aware of him. I think we knew plenty of people between us who did know him. Yeah. And I've had conversations with people in the past who just say he's just a great guy. And you got that sense from watching him, from seeing him in interviews. Just energetic, seemed to be very pleasant, very generous with his time. I was following the WRC quite closely when he contested a few rounds, I think back in 2010. Now, the guy wasn't quite on the pace of Sebastian Loeb and the best in the world, but he was a seriously good driver, nevertheless. And you can tell that from his Gymkhana videos. All that stuff takes a heck of a lot of skill. And he could do it, and he was a proper showman, wasn't he?
I mean, I don't know nearly enough about his world, but I do know from the sort of race car world that you occasionally get these specialists come along who do a certain sort of thing better than anybody else. I mean, the example I can give is when Steve McQueen was filming the Le Mans movie in 1970, and he had the greatest drivers in the world because they just stayed on after the race for months to record the film. But when they needed a shot of someone skidding a 512S or a 917, they all went, no tar. And they went and got a bloke called Rob Slottermacher, who was just a drift specialist. He was an ace, and and he was better at that sort of thing than anybody else. And I think that's probably where Block was, wasn't it? He was just, he figured out what it was that he could do and just took it to a completely new level, didn't he?
He did. And he built the Hoonigans brand. He built the Gymkhana video series, and with his team, they built some phenomenal cars. And the one that comes to mind is that Mustang I think it had a NASCAR engine. Outrageous amount of power. But the way he throws that car around, that's a phenomenal level of skill. And actually, what leaps out at me is that, it's not often that a car media artifact becomes a global phenomenon. is it really? And, you know, the examples that spring to mind, the Clarkson, Hammond and May era Top Gear, the F1 documentary Drive to Survive, perhaps the Senna film, and perhaps the McQueen film that you just mentioned as well. There are a few examples of something in the car space, be it a film, be it something written, be it a book, be it a TV show, that does reach, it transcends the core car audience and reaches an enormous global audience.
It breaks
audience.
Out of the car it space, does. Doesn't it? And becomes something else.
It becomes something much bigger. Yeah. And Jim Carner did that. And it's a rare thing to be able to create something that transcends just the car world. But Ken Block did that with Hoonigans, with the Jim Carner videos. Extraordinary achievement. Really, really extraordinary. Yeah, and I think we're both sad, very sad that he's gone.
It's just a terrible shame. I think he was tweeting from his place in Utah, you know, hours before the accident. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, as you say, it's just a complete bolt from the blue, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, he leaves behind a wife and kids. And so our thoughts are with all his friends and family. Okay, so we're talking this week about the Hot Hatch World Cup.
Yes.
An idea of yours. Really, it was to keep us busy and active over Christmas, wasn't it? The Football World Cup ended, and to keep things ticking along on our social media platforms, we decided to stage a kind of nations contest of our own.
Yeah.
It was your idea, your doing, your fault. why Hot Hatches? Just a sort of easy place to start?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I mean, okay, so I thought about the idea. You know, I was just thinking, you know, not that I'm a particular footy fan, but I mean, once every 4 years, even I get quite interested in 22 men kicking a ball around the field. And I was just thinking about that. And I was, and then when the idea of doing a car World Cup came up, I just thought instantly Hot Hatches. I mean, obviously there is scope, and hopefully in time we will do other. You know, there's sorts of World's Cup. I don't imagine we'll ever do a crossover SUV World Cup, but, you know, there's clearly, you know, supercars and sports cars and, you know, faster state cars and all sorts of, I mean, people have been suggesting all sorts of things. But, I mean, the Hot Hatch, because, I mean, the Hot Hatch, I think it's the sort of thing which unites us all, isn't it? Because it's the, always has been the most accessible form of fun, because even if you go and buy an MX-5, that still requires you to only, you know, need two seats and that sort of thing. I mean, most of us actually need a bit more space in our lives. And so all of us at some stage, or certainly most of us, will have come across hot hatchbacks. It's the one thing that, I mean, everybody has an informed opinion about. And it just seemed like really just a fun thing to do. And then it was just a question of sort of working out which nations could get involved and a little bit of jiggery pokery. We got so much grief, didn't we, by putting Ford as American, which clearly the company is, but none of its hot hatchbacks are. But it was that, or, you know, put them in with Germany, or you, where would you put Ford? I mean, who knows? So we did that. We sadly had to exclude the Czech Republic because we needed eight teams so we could have four quarterfinals. And Skoda was the ninth, so there's no Octavia VRS in there. But it was just a little bit of fun, which appears to have sort of captured something. And people have got really stuck in and involved. We've had thousands and thousands of votes for it. And as I say, it was just a fun thing to do over the course of Christmas and the New Year.
Yeah. Okay, just one point on the pedantry, because it was funny. And I understand why people... And actually, it's good that people feel... sort of wound up enough about it to bother to reply, because you want people to go to engage, don't you? And the point about the nations, which countries certain hot hatches come from, I saw some people were confused as to why we declared the Focus RS American, but the Mini British. You know, they were pointing. Someone pointed out that actually, how can you declare Ford Focus RS American when it's clearly built in, designed and built in Europe? And then someone else was saying, how can you declare a Mini British when it's owned by a German company? So do we go with ownership? Do we go with where the cars are designed and built? In the end, we kept it simple, didn't we? Because that's actually the only way to do it. So we went with, where is the mark behind this particular car from? And quite clearly, Ford is an American brand. If you don't do that, there are so many exceptions that you have to make. And you end up with a rule book an inch thick, and it becomes horribly complicated. And no one can follow you, and people don't actually know which cars are representing which countries. So the only way to do it is to keep it simple.
I mean, at that stage, where does an Integrale come from? You know, Lancia is owned by Stellantis.
Yeah.
I don't even know what Stellantis is. Is Stellantis French? Is it America? I don't know. Who knows?
But yeah.
It's not Italian.
And Seat, are they really less Spanish than a Mini is British?
Yeah.
The previous Civic Type R was built in Swindon.
Yeah.
Does that represent Swindon?
I mean, the great thing about it is we get to make the rules.
We do.
And you can disagree with them as much as you like, and that's absolutely fine. And lots of you had lots of good reasons to disagree with them. But whatever alternative anyone suggests, another bunch of people would disagree equally with that. So in the end, we just decided to do it the way we wanted to do it. And the only way which kind of made a bit of coherent sense to us. And it was just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
So hopefully everybody enjoyed doing it, but nobody took it that seriously.
And the last point is that we decided to go with a broad definition of what a hot hatch is. Because again, this is another one of those points that people can debate till the cows come home. Some people were saying, for me, a hot hatch should be front-wheel drive and affordable. I think we went with a broad definition to avoid having an inch-thick rule book. We all know what a hatchback is. You know, some people might point out that you can get an E-Type with a hatchback boot.
Exactly.
But we know, don't we? Come on, we all know that's not a hatchback. And we know that a hot hatchback is a go-faster version of a normal everyday hatchback car. So it's quite clear. And within hatchback, there are, of course, different types. There are four-wheel drive mega hatches. There are warm hatches. There are rear-wheel drive cars, only a few. There are rally homologation specials. But we know what a hot hatch is. So we went with a broad definition so that it didn't get horribly complicated and confusing. So there we go. I just wanted to explain why we made some of the choices that we did. And actually, so coming up with the eight countries was fairly straightforward. As you said, one or two, did we go with Spain or the Czech Republic? We went with Spain in the end because of Seat. But it wasn't up to us to choose which cars would represent each nation.
No, we chose nothing.
Mm.
Well, we chose the draw once the representatives had been found. But no, I mean, if you haven't seen it, we just put one a day for 8 days. We just put eight nations on Twitter, and we got people to vote for whichever cars they wanted, and then we added them up. I mean, sometimes the adding up we had to interpret a bit because some people would just go Golf GTI without saying which one of the eight generations they were talking about. But actually, I mean, it wasn't in almost all cases it was pretty clear cut what they were referring to, and we did want sort of specific cars from specifically Golf GTI. There's no way that you could have put all eight generations of Golf GTI. It would have been completely unfair to everything else. Everybody else, their thousands got in touch on Twitter and put their nominations forward. And I guess most of them were what you expected, but not all.
No, and let's run through them. So the point of all this was a bit of fun, first and foremost, a bit of fun. But we wanted to declare one car the greatest hot hatch of all time, as voted for by the Intercooler audience. Not by us, but by our readers and listeners. And so the cars that were ultimately nominated to represent each country were France. It was always going to be the Peugeot 205 GTR.
I just thought, of course, it would be the 205. And indeed, that's how it turned out. But if you actually go through and tot it up, the Renault Sport Clio, the 172 and the 182, ran it remarkably close. I was having to do a lot of, going back and recounting and rechecking, and, there wasn't much in it.
Wow.
And then we could have had a completely different outcome.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Germany, VW Golf GTI Mark 1.
But again, there, the Mark 5 and the Mark 7 R, both did really, really well.
That's interesting. I guess that demonstrates that there is sort of variety in the TI audience, isn't there? There will be people out there who owned and loved the 205 GTI, the Mark 1 Golf when they were new, but others who have owned the more modern cars more recently and remember those very fondly.
And finally, very little interest. Okay, there's a bit of interest in the BMWs, quite rightly in my view, the M135i and 140i. Very little interest in Mercedes.
The A45s.
The most powerful hot hatchback that there's ever been.
Mm.
not even sure it got a vote.
So they don't really resonate,
do
they?
I need to go back and have a look.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So before all this, I tried to point out to you that Britain was not well represented in the hot hatch stakes. And it's not compared to France and Germany, but you came back and said, actually, there's this. So there's a few bits and pieces out there from Britain.
Yeah. And I say this as a proud former MG Metro owner.
Yeah. So I'm not sure Britain was in with a chance of winning this contest. But, in the end, our audience nominated the Mini Cooper JCW, the R53, so the first under the BMW ownership. Was that the GP? Was that the raw two-seat one?
No, it's just it was the JCW.
Okay, fine. So
yeah,
the,
it wasn't the there wasn't. You know, that's really there. There were a couple of people who popped up with the E-Type. Nobody popped up with the S&D B24 Mark III, which I thought was a bit disappointing. But there were some votes for the Sunbeam Lotus.
Yeah,
which would probably have got my vote.
I think a couple of MGs. The ZS was that? No, the ZR was the hatchback.
Well, the ZS
one,
and the ZR were both hatchbacks. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They were good cars.
Yeah, they were. My uncle had one. Had the ZS 180 with the V6. It was a cool thing, really cool thing. Italy. No, we shouldn't say Lancia, should we? We should say Lancia.
Lancia.
Integrale Evo 2, specifically. What were the alternatives there? Abarths?
There's quite a lot of love for an Uno Turbo. Who knew? Strada 130 TC.
Yeah.
Bit of love for the Alfa Sud. Despite the fact that it wasn't a hatchback for almost all of its life. I think the car came out in 1971. I think it gained a hatch in 1983. So it was really last knockies to the bit. But it was a hatchback towards the end of its life. And then things like, Alfa 147 GTA and the Volumex Lancia Beta HPE, stuff like that. But no, I mean, the Grali just walked it, which it was always going to.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Japan. Now, was I surprised by this? I think I was. Was it close? Yeah. In the end, it was the Toyota GR Yaris.
Yeah. But both the EP3 and the EK9 Civics ran it so close.
Mm. Do you know what? I wonder if there had only been one or two Civic Type Rs from history from which to choose.
Yeah.
Because you fragment the vote, don't you, by having generations of them.
Yeah.
Whereas there's clearly only been one GR Yaris. So that might have been why, in the end, the GR Yaris got the nod. But it's fine. It's a worthy
I'm glad that it did, because otherwise we would have been very thin on the ground on modern cars.
Recent stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And there was the inevitable few votes for the AE86 Corolla as well, which would have been mega. But I think it's just too niche and too little known these days, isn't it? So the Yaris did win it. But again, I think it is important to note just how close the Civic ran it.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, so there you go.
South Korea, probably the most recent arrival on the hot hatch scene. And you're talking Hyundai's, really, aren't you? And
apart from the Stinger.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Hyundai i30N. So that seemed to get the nod over, it did get the nod over the i20N, the smaller i20N.
Yeah, but again, not by much.
Okay. Yeah, and it's a good car, really good car, the i30N. Few different versions of it, but they're good things. Spain, Seat León Cupra R.
Yeah, move on. I mean, it was never going to be anything else, was it? Really?
And then America, the USA, Ford Focus RS Mark I. I know, not designed or built in the USA, but come on, it's a Ford. It's a blue oval. It's Ford. From America.
And the other contenders, nothing other than Fords, I'm afraid. No. No Chevrolets or anything else, but there was obviously the Fiesta ST got a few votes.
Yeah.
Not as many as I thought it would, but fair enough. And one or two for the Sierra Cosworth. Is the Sierra Cosworth due a hot hatchback? I think it is.
I'd say the Escort RS Cosworth is a hot hatch.
Yeah.
Not sure. Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter now, does it?
I didn't get through, no, so it doesn't matter at all.
So those are the candidates. 205 GTI. Mark 1 Golf GTI, Mini Cooper JCW, Integrale Evo 2, GR Yaris, i30N, Seat León Cupra R, Ford Focus RS Mark 1. Good mix of four-wheel drive and front-wheel drive. Good mix of older stuff, newer stuff, bigger, smaller cars. Mostly turbocharged. But I think that's a good cross-section of the hot hatch world, isn't it? I'm quite pleased with the eight candidates that we had in the end.
Yeah, I mean, given that they span, you know, modern day cars like the i30N and the Yaris, going right back to, well, okay, we've made this point before, that the Golf GTI is absolutely not the first hot hatchback, but the car which is perceived to have founded the category. Mm. And there's a good smattering of 80 stuff and 90 stuff and 2000 stuff. It's a really, really good cross section, and you know, and I think the point is worth making again. You know, none of this was our choosing, was it?
No. All voted for by our audience. So if you have any particular grievances, you'll have to take it up with several thousand TI readers. Okay, so it's on Boxing Day that we kicked off the first quarterfinal, which was France versus South Korea, 205 GTI versus i30N. It's not difficult to guess which one would win that particular head-to-head. We did this, by the way, on Twitter using the polls function. So it's very, very easy for anyone to go over to our Twitter page and just vote for the car that they prefer. And the winner would go through to the next round. Very straightforward. So the 205 GTI won, no great surprises there. But the Hyundai picked up 22% of the vote. So, you know, there were others that were more dominant than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So credit to the Hyundai for, you know,
Given that it was up against, you know, what I think most people would regard to be the sort of iconic, almost the definitive hot hatchback.
Yeah.
For better than one in five people to choose a Hyundai over it, I think it just goes to show, you know, well, to an extent, I guess. You mustn't take this, you know, read too much into this, but, you know, it's how perceptions have changed.
Mm. Yeah, indeed.
And a lot's aging.
So, 205 GTI through to the semis. Back in the quarterfinals, VW Golf GTI Mark 1 versus Seat Leon Cupra Mark 1. Cupra R, isn't it?
Yes, Cupra R.
Again, well, this was almost totally one-sided. 86% of the vote for the Golf, 14 for the Leon. Not a big surprise there at all. I think that was the most dominant victory in the whole thing, actually, in the whole contest.
It was, yeah. I'd be quite interested to speak to, you know, there were still quite a few people would have voted for the Seat and just got their thinking on that. Hang on, so you're up against, you know, the archetypal, certainly the prototypal hot hatchback, but you thought a Seat Leon was better than that.
Mm. There will be some iconoclasts, won't there?
Yeah. Yeah, which is fair enough. Like the idea of, yeah.
don't like the predictability. Okay, so okay, the third quarter final.
I didn't see this coming.
Britain, no, not at all. Britain versus Japan, R53 Mini Cooper JCW versus Toyota GR Yaris. Very close run thing.
I thought the Yaris would just walk it.
Yeah, I did as well. Maybe this says we have lots of British, well, we clearly have lots of British followers, so perhaps that helped the Mini, but it picked up 48% of the vote. Yeah, home advantage.
48% of the vote. Yeah,
that's very that's a very narrow win for the GI Yaris.
It was easily the closest contest in all the quarterfinals that we had.
Yeah, it was easily.
Very close. It makes me want to go and drive an R53 JCW again because it's been a while.
Yeah, same. It has been a while. Fun little things though. Okay, so the final quarterfinal, if you see what I mean, was the Integrale Evo 2 versus Ford Focus RS Mark 1. Actually, this is surprising as well. The Lancia.
For the other reason.
Yeah, the Lancia, 73% of the vote. Trounced it.
Yeah, trounced it. Again, didn't see that coming either. I thought it would be much closer.
I thought Ford Focus RS Mark 1 was one of those hot hatches that people were really drawn to.
Yeah, I mean, you would have bet all day long whether a Focus RS would get closer to an Integrale than an R53 Mini would get to a GR Yaris, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But not even close.
I'm glad we've had plenty of, you know, surprising results in this. Otherwise, you could just see it coming a mile off. But
I mean, the Focus got barely a quarter of the vote.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what does it say? People love Integrales.
I think I've probably underestimated how the Integrale resonates because, well, that is, it's mauled it there, 73% to 27%. What is it about the Integrale? You know, there'll be plenty of rally fans out there, plenty of people who love the idea of a proper homologation special, plenty of people who love the look because it's a superb looking car, the Integrale. Yeah. So whatever it is, it absolutely
I think it has an authenticity to it, doesn't it? You know, because they identify it with all those great people who drove them in period, and it was of them all. It was the one that sort of really got out there and did it. So it does have a dimension that the others lack.
True.
And it's strange because although I have enjoyed driving many Integrales over the years, I've never been completely smitten by one. I've always thought, yeah, these are really good. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, and I've been accused of, you know, hating Integrales. Absolutely not the truth. I really, really like them. Almost everything that people say about them is true, but I've never felt passionate about them, and I don't know why. I've driven some that were, you know, which are very fast, and they're all incredibly capable. But they've always been to me a hot hatchback. It's not about being fast or, you know, incredibly fast. It's just about interaction and fun and adjustability and balance and that sort of thing. And I've just always found others that do that better. But that's just me.
I've spent so little time driving them, but I think that's one of the things I now want to do in the early part of 2023 is have a proper go in a Delta Integrale Evo 2. And try and understand why it is that so many people seem to be so drawn to it. And just what is the reality? Is it genuinely exciting and fun to drive that car? Or is there a romance about it that people are drawn to? It's also interesting that I'm aware of lots and lots of collectors with, you know, all the latest supercars and hypercars and lots of very special stuff in their collections. They'll have an Integrale Evo 2. I know several of these guys who have them and use them quite a lot through the winter. So there must be something about those cars, and I'd like to investigate
maybe
that.
We should do that. And I don't really, you know, plan on having a sort of features meeting in the middle of our podcast, but maybe we should go and get a 205 and an Integrale.
Yeah.
And now that the readers and followers have had their say, maybe you and I take what they say and, you know, and see what we think. Maybe we'll just go out and have our say.
Very interesting idea.
If you like the idea, let us know.
Yeah, let us know. And if you have a mint 205 GTI or an Evo 2, get in touch.
Or both,
yeah, get in touch. As a car journalist, I spend lots of time far from home in airports and hotels using whatever Wi-Fi network is available. But I've started using NordVPN to protect my devices and data while travelling. It's easy to use, and best of all, I can still watch streaming services when I'm not at home. I can't tell you how annoying it is to be told I can't watch a Grand Prix or catch up on Top Gear just because I'm overseas. But now I can be halfway around the world and make websites and streaming platforms think I'm back at home in Bristol. We've partnered with NordVPN to offer you a massively discounted rate, and I mean more than 60% off the standard cost, plus 4 months for free. It's a hell of an offer. If you've been meaning to check out VPNs but haven't got around to it, just go and try NordVPN now. That's NORD VPN. Take advantage of this offer at nordvpn.com/intercooler, or you can click on the link in the description of this podcast. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can try NordVPN risk-free. Right, let's get back to the podcast. Okay, so we move into the semi-finals. The first of the two semi-finals was Japan against France, Toyota GR Yaris, 205 GTI. Fairly straightforward which way that's going to go, isn't it? Two-thirds of the vote to the 205 GTI. So a decent showing from the GR Yaris. And I guess it demonstrates that that's another one of those cars that there's a recency bias there, I'm sure, but that is one of those cars that has grabbed the imagination. And people are particularly drawn to that car. You know, just over a third of the vote is not a bad showing against perhaps the icon of hot hatch icons.
Yeah, no, I think it did well. I think it's because, what's it put? Manual gearbox. I also think that Toyota at the moment is just regarded as one of those companies that's kind of on your side, you know, producing cars like the GR86 and, you know, just deciding to stick a manual gearbox in the Supra and, you know, doing the GR Yaris. I mean, there's so few big companies like that showing their enthusiast side and not just doing it with badging and, you know, bit of red paint and, you know, and that sort of thing, but actually making properly developed, you know, really amazing driver's cars. And I think there's a lot of love out there, not just for the car, but for the attitude that lies behind it. So I'm guessing that's why it is. Even so, you know, two in three people voted for the for the 205. So it just goes to show, you know, what, you know, anything that comes up against it in the final is going to be up against. It's a formidable contender.
Now, how much would you have voted, how much would you have bet on the second semi-final going the way of the Golf GTI Mark 1 against the Integrale?
Plenty.
Plenty?
I would have bet plenty. I would never have thought that the Golf would have walked all over the Integrale. But I would have said it would have run out of convincing win. I would have said it would have been about the same as the 205 with the Yaris. I would have said it would have been like sort of 65-35, something like that.
In the it's event, not, is almost the opposite. The Golf got 37% of the vote, 63% for the Integrale.
Yeah. So this was the upset of the tournament, wasn't it?
It was the upset of the tournament, that's right, yeah. I did not see that coming. I thought we were cruising towards 205 GTI versus Mark 1 Golf GTI in the final.
Everybody thought that.
Yeah, that
lots of people said, why are you doing this? We know what's going to happen. It's going to be the 205 versus the Golf in the final.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Yeah. So I'm so glad we had that unexpected result, a bit of a shock. Because you want that in any of these contests, don't you? You want that surprise. And so we go into the final that nobody saw coming, Integrale Evo 2 versus 205 GTI, Italy versus France.
Mm.
And my word, well, A, we didn't predict that final.
Yeah.
And B, who saw it being as close as it was?
52-48.
More than 1,700 votes.
It was probably 100 votes between them.
Yeah. Not much.
Not much at all.
It could only have been narrower by one percentage point, couldn't it?
Yes, absolutely right. Yeah, because then it would have been a dead heat.
Yeah. So, blimey. Super, super close. And in the end, it went the way of the 205 GTI.
Yeah. Yeah. As I guess most people would. I mean, it was the favourite, wasn't it?
It was the favourite, yeah. There's no question it was the favourite, and it did win. But I'm just delighted that we had a very, very close contest in the final, because nobody saw that coming. You might have predicted the winner, but nobody predicted the Lancia running it so close.
I mean, it sailed through the quarters and through the semis.
Yeah.
But it had a proper fight in the final.
Yeah, real dust up.
Which is what we wanted. And you know, maybe if it had been up against the Golf, maybe I think it probably would have been a much more convincing win. I just completely underestimated the love for the Integrale that's out there.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? So we need to investigate the Integrale a bit more. Find an example, drive it, photograph it, and just sort of dig into it a little bit more. Find out why people do love them so much. Now we haven't declared which 205 GTI. It was that was representing France in this contest. Does it matter? And if it does matter, would you choose a 1.6 or a 1.9? Is there a specific year?
Well, it has to be. Well, I mean, to me, well, I mean, I think there's a good argument for 1.6, but I mean, it depends how nitty gritty you want to get through it. So yeah. I would go a non sunroof, non power assisted series 1.5, 1.9 pre cat 205. But you know, so. You know, if you want to really, really drill down, you know, I'd like the Miami Blue specification limited edition with leather seats and mud flaps.
There's your winner.
So if you want to, you know, explicit, which also happens to describe the car I used to own perfectly. So that's what I would have. But I think, you know, given that the 1.6 and the 1.9 were on sale at the same time, so it was not like they were different generations of cars. I think we can put that under the 205G, but call them, you know, essentially the result refers to both cars.
Mm. Yeah, okay, fine. So the 205 GTI wins, and as voted for by the TI audience, not you and me, but by the audience, you have all voted the 205 GTI the greatest hot hatch of all time. And I'm not going to argue with that. But we'll come back to the 205 in a minute. I'd like to hear some of your thoughts on the car specifically. But I was just wondering how different my 8 nominations to represent each country would be to what we came up with in the end.
Oh, okay.
I haven't got the full list, but, you know, there are several that would be quite different. And this is because most of them are more modern cars, just because how my career has fallen. I've spent more time in them. You know,
yeah.
I've had much more opportunity to appreciate these cars. They're the ones I know well, the ones that I've really loved driving the most. And so for France, I'd have chosen the Renault Sport Mégane R26R.
Yeah.
A superb thing. I'd have chosen the Golf GTI Club Sport S, the Mark 7. Now, neither of those have rear seats. And there is a good case to say that a hot hatch with two seats is kind of missing the point of a hot hatch. I totally understand that. But by our broad definition, both those cars remain hot hatches. I think for Japan, I'd have had the previous Civic Type R, only because I've not driven the brand new one, but I'm driving that next week, I think, so maybe I can report back on that. I'd have had the Fiesta ST Performance representing the USA. So my list would have been really quite different. Which ones would you have had on your list that the audience didn't choose?
Okay, so let's run through it quickly. So France, I would have had the 205. I'm afraid. Germany, I wouldn't have had a Mark 1 GTI. Mm. I would have either have had, I'm not just saying this because you're here, I would have really struggled between a Mark 5 and a Mark 7 GTI. Mm. Really would have struggled. I think I would have gone for the Mark 5 in the end just because it was, when it was new, it was a greater car than the Mark 7 was when it was new. Mm. UK, I would have had the Sunbeam Lotus. That's because I'm old and it goes sideways.
Yeah.
Italy was always going to be the Integrale, even for me, who's not the world's greatest Integrale fan. Japan, I'd have had a Civic. You know, I would have had, I don't know whether I had an EP3 or an EK9. I mean, they followed each other and they're the first two Civic Type R's. But a really nutty original would have been very cool. Skoda, I probably would have had an I20N, not an I30N for South Korea, sorry, and Spain, yeah, Leon, and the US. Focus RS. It would have been a Focus RS or a Fiesta ST. And certainly for the Gen 1 Focus RS. I think I'd have had a Fiesta ST. I've had so much fun in Fiesta STs.
Superb, yeah. Superb.
An ST 200 with maybe a little bit of Mount Tune love on top of it. I mean, yeah, just such a brilliant... I mean, you know, years from now when we're all driving around in, you know, in electric boxes... And we're looking back at, you know, it's just going to be one of those cars. We're going to look back and think, did they really make a car that much fun for so little money? And we're just going to miss it.
Oh, God, aren't we ever, yeah.
We're going to miss all the fun we're not having it anymore.
We probably didn't know how good we had it, did we?
I think that's exactly right. Mm. I mean, except, you know, sometimes I can remember, I don't know where I was going, but I was up on a mountain road in a Fiesta ST. I can't even remember which generation it was, whether it was the 4 or the 3-cylinder one. But I can remember this sense of just thinking, this is ridiculous. I should not be having this much fun in a car that cost at the time 15, 16 grand or whatever it was. You know, half the price of a new electric Corsa. And just thinking, this is almost too good to be true. And I think that's probably the way we'll come to regard them and just think that there was this sort of moment when these fabulous cars, because they were so little more expensive than a standard well-equipped Fiesta with a 1-litre engine, or you could spend another 1,500 quid and you get yourself an ST. I think I would have had that over the Focus. I mean, the Focus RS was an amazing car and I love it. But I think the Fiesta ST is a more important car.
Mm. Yeah, well said. So back to the 205. I've driven one, only one, only quite briefly. So you've suggested we might try and get the two finalists together and dig into them a little bit more.
The more I think about it, the more I kind of think we need to do this.
Yeah, okay, I agree. I just want to spend a proper amount of time in a really tidy 205 GTI.
Yeah.
And on a great road as well, and make sure I've understood it properly, understood why it's won this contest,
thing is going to be finding the right car. You know, I know this is someone who's gone out and done the research and bought a 205, and you know, I ended up being quite lucky and I had a nice car, but there are so many dogs out there. There are so many cars which, you know, might look quite nice, but they've been thrashed and they've been modded and they've not been looked after, and you know, I'll know if it's a good one or not. But yeah, I mean, it has to be the right car, because I think the wrong kind of 205 GTI experience, you're just going to sit there thinking, well, what are people
about?
Yeah.
So the one that I drove had recently been restored and it was on modern tyres. And I wonder how much of a factor are modern tyres going to be? Are they going to take something away from the driving experience? Or
Yeah, it does. It does a bit. I mean, they just calm it down a bit, and it, well, some would say that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, even my car, which was on, you know, I got the ropiest type modern tyres I could get for it. well, not quite the ropiest of the sort of main brands. It was on Dunlops, and even that, you know, it would go sideways pretty much at the drop of a hat. But it wasn't quite the ridiculously acrobatic thing that they used to. Because I mean, I had a 205 1.6 when it was new. 1985, blimey, that's a while back. Anyway, so I know what they should feel like, and I know how many times that thing spat me off the road because I didn't know how to drive it. And yeah, modern tyres do make a bit of a difference, but I mean, not a huge amount. And I also think that Michelin, who provided the original, who are the OE tyre manufacturer for that car, now do, you know, reissues. So you can go buy an MXV or an MXV2 or whatever the car would have come on originally. And it'll look exactly the same. It will drive very similar. It's not quite exactly the same, but it'll be as close as you can get. And if somebody has restored a car properly, they're going to put those on it.
Mm. Yeah, okay. So there we go. That's what we need to find, is a good example of the 205 GTI and really get underneath its skin, because I just have to know why it is that it won this contest, for one thing, and why people rhapsodise about these cars. I remember, well, how old was I? 15, I don't know. This was 20 odd years ago, maybe 22 years ago, something like that. I was on a family canoeing holiday. We were kayaking down the River Wye.
Okay.
We must have started a fair way up because it took several days.
It's probably came past my place.
Possibly. And I remember being a little bit grumpy about it on one of the days. And we came into...
Well, Harry, 15 years old, going on a canoeing holiday, and you're a bit grumpy about it. I can't imagine why.
And we came into Ross-on-Wye, and to try and cheer me up a bit, my dad bought me a copy of Trade It. Do you remember that, the paper, Trade It?
No.
You don't?
No.
Wow.
There's like Exchange and Mart.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, a classified ads paper. Because we had this idea that we might go and buy a car to have some fun with. And I remember flicking through it and finding the Peugeot 205 GTIs in there, and seeing an example up for £250.
Ooh.
And it was a runner, and you know, had an MOT, and I even made the phone call and asked a couple of questions about it. Didn't go any further, but I guess that demonstrates why there are so many dogs out there, because a while ago they were filthy cheap, weren't they?
Yeah.
And people will have just abused them, not
neglected
looked after them.
Yeah, yeah, nobody cared.
And now, a really tidy one is, well, I don't know, 15 grand, is it? Is it more than
that? Yeah, oh, it can be. Absolutely can be. It's all, you know, those things are very mileage sensitive now. If you have a nice, clean 1.9 with 45,000 miles on the clock, that's a 30 grand car these days.
Mm. Bloody hell. Yeah. 30 grand?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right, so yeah, we will do that. Now, I think we need to do more of these World Cups, as you mentioned earlier, but they don't have to be. We won't give away what we are going to do in the future, but they don't have to be positive, do they? They don't have to be restricted to an individual category of car. We can mix it up a bit, have some fun with it.
The world's worst cars, or...
Yeah. Yeah, we could do the worst cars.
Yeah.
That will motivate people. That will get some... get a reaction, won't it? So we'll kick a few ideas about between us and figure out what we do next. But for now, just, you know, thank you everybody who took part, who nominated cars, who voted in the polls. Hopefully it was a bit of a diversion over Christmas, and as it was intended to be, just a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
So we've got a listener question coming up to bring this episode to a close. Before I do that, I must just remind you all to rate and review the podcast. That is, it's basically the primary mechanism that we have for finding new podcast listeners. And the bigger the podcast gets, the more we can do with it. So please do rate and review. I can see you doing it, and I really appreciate it. And while you're doing us a favour, go and check out the-intercooler.com. And if you haven't subscribed already, maybe now is the time to start your 1 month free trial and see what the-intercooler.com is all about. So the listener question comes from Pat Brown. Interesting question. What is your writing process from drive to published article?
Oh my God.
What hardware or software do you use? Where, when do you write? How do you stick to a certain number of words? How long do you typically get to complete a piece? Who edits and signs off your work? So just shedding a little bit of light on the writing process, I suppose.
I mean, that is, I mean, there's an entire, well, it'd be a very boring podcast, but there is an entire podcast in the answer to that question. It just depends so much on, you know, there are pieces which you can spend. I recently published a story on the-intercooler.com. One of the things we do there is sometimes we do stories which aren't about cars at all, because we can and we love it. And I did a story about some insane journey in the Antarctic in 1911, where three people set off to collect some eggs and all almost die. And that took days of research. Mm. But it's something that I wanted to do. Sometimes, however, you will be in a position where, when Dan, you had this recently, where you got to drive a new Ferrari and you had five laps of Fiorano, including you're out and you're in. So you like, so basically you have about, you probably have less than 5 minutes of evaluating time, in which everything, you have to discover everything that your readers might want to know about the car that you're in. And yeah, those are the kind of like the two poles. One where you can be, you know, considered and take your time and really do a proper job on it. And the other one where you're just, oh my God, we just got to get this job done. Mm. And yeah, I quite like both, actually. I quite like, you know, having the time, not that it happens very often, to really research problems. But I also like, because I think it is one of the things that marks out those who are quite good at this job, is people who can come to reliable verdicts in the most suboptimal of circumstances and give a real impression of a car. And if I feel I'm doing that well, then, you know, I like that too. So, but normally what will happen is, let us say a car comes to me, I will go off and drive it. Where I live is quite remote. I can be on a decent driving road, 30 seconds from leaving my front door. And I have various routes. Depending on how much time I have, depending on the kind of car that it is, I will choose the route that I think suits it best, which will have a bit of everything in it. It'll have some mountain road in it. It'll have a bit of urban. It'll certainly have a long stretch of dual carriageway in it. So I'll be able to. And, you know, I will often have a dictaphone or a notebook or whatever with me. But actually, if you do this for long enough, you kind of, it all sinks in pretty quickly. Mm. And by the time you're home, you know, if you drive it even for 2 hours on roads that you know inside out, that you've been over in 1,000 other cars over the years, that'll tell you more than days driving them on roads you don't know at all. So, you know, you get an impression very quickly. And then you sit down, and depending on what sort of piece it is, you structure it in your head. I mean, I'd love to say that I sort of sit down and do an entire sort of treatment and storyboard and everything else, but we just don't have time to do that.
No.
And, you know, again, one of the skills of this job is to kind of be able to sit down, start a story, and know where it's going, and to keep control of it, so you don't disappear off down blind alleys, and you don't, you know, you lead the story, it doesn't lead you. And as far as the word count is concerned, you just know. Somebody says to you, okay, we want 800 words. That's a completely different story to 2,500 words. And you don't sit there and think, oh, well, I've only got 800 words, therefore I'm going to, you know, not write about this, I'm not write about that, or cut. You just sit there and you write, and at the end of it, it's 800 words, because you've done it for so long. Your brain just, it's almost like muscle memory. Your brain just knows what to do. Yeah.
It's a curious thing, isn't it? And you find yourself reaching the end of your conclusion as the 800th word comes up, and you think, not bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's like your body, you know. Sometimes you think, oh, I've got to get up at 4:30 in the morning, so I'll set an alarm. But because your brain knows you've got to get up at your brain knows what 4:30 in the morning is, and it just does it anyway. And it's exactly the same thing. There's something going on in the subconscious where you just sort of program yourself to do a certain thing, and you go and do it. So, you know, hitting a word count is nothing like as hard as perhaps it might seem. Some people go over, and that's fine. But you know, for me, it's all, I've been very lucky. It's always quite straightforward.
I love that on TI we have the space. So if it's so frustrating when you, I remember doing a really long drive in a special car for a magazine, amazing photos, plenty to write about, interesting car, and having, I don't know, 1500 words in which to convey all this. And it's so frustrating because you, it's not the story you want to write.
Yeah.
It's, you feel limited. I remember reading that, writing an article, a short article, is like swimming in the bath. Writing a novel is like swimming in the sea. Swimming in the bath is really funny, and it's restricting. And we don't have that on TI, you know, because we're digital. If we want to write even up to 3,000 words or something, yeah, or more, we can do that. But it takes a bit of discipline, doesn't it, to not be so verbose that you take up 3,000 words saying not very much at all. That's a key skill.
But I mean, I can remember back in the days when I was testing cars for the Sunday Times every week. There was an all-new Ford Focus. This was when the Focus was Britain's best-selling car. There couldn't be a more important car to readers of the Sunday Times. And it was one of those massive launches where you've got 8 different models and 5 different engines, and you know, and you'd have a hatchback and you'd have the estate, and there, and I had 400 words in which to introduce the new Ford Focus to the readers of the Sunday Times. It was almost impossible, because there are certain, by the time you have got down, you know, the information, the barest of bald facts about the car which people need to know, there is no space left for writing. You know, you almost end yourself up, you know, writing a sort of spec list and stringing it together into sentences. Because, and as you say, you know, on TI, just be able to sit down and just write what feels correct for the story. And that's the other thing. I mean, you know, all stories have, in your head, and it's one of the things that editors learn to do very quickly, is you just get to see a story. And somebody comes to you and goes, oh, I've driven this, or I want to do a story about this person, or whatever. And in your head, a figure just pops up and you think, oh, that's a 1,200-word story. That's a 2,000-word story. That's an 800-word story. Mm. And stories just have natural lengths. And believe me, 400 words is not a natural length for an all-new Ford Focus.
I remember being on staff on a magazine, and the pace is so frantic that I would write anywhere I could. So it might be on the coach on a launch, it might be on a plane, often on the plane on the way home from the launch itself, and you're frantically trying to get your copy together so you can ping it across the moment you land. Airport waiting lounges, a lay-by in the middle of a photo shoot. It's crazy, really, isn't it? Something you can find yourself writing anywhere. Now I managed to avoid that, and I'm in my office, the one I'm in now, and I have a good environment. And actually, when I'm not in the right frame of mind, I can often say, I'm going to come back to this in an hour or two, or tomorrow morning, and have another crack at it when I'm better able to say what I want to say. So there we go. Thank you, Pat, for your question. An interesting one.
Yeah.
Please do get your questions across. We'll end next week's podcast with another. And, well, happy new year to all of you.
Yeah, 2023 is a good year. One. Yeah, and thank you for all your support. We have enormous plans for 2023. We look forward to telling you more about them. Hopefully seeing some of you, actually getting to meet up.
Yeah.
That's a big component of what we're going to do. But in the meantime, yeah, happy new year. Thanks for all the support, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.